At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Western history has led us to the most prosperous age in the history of humanity, and yet more and more our kids are taught to be ashamed of their country. Are you tired of Common Core, Howard Zinn-influenced revisionist history in our schools? Do you want your family to have fun learning about history that you can trust? Do you want your kids to learn to love history? Then DriveThruHistory.com is for you. The guys over at DriveThruHistory.com have created a world of entertaining, on-location, video-based courses for your kids. They've got ancient history, American history, biblical history, and world history. Perfect for all of you who find yourself homeschooling for the first time. It's fun, and your kids are going to love it. To learn more, head over to DriveThruHistory.com/Zuby, Z-U-B-Y, where they've got streamed courses and old school DVDs, and you can use the code Zuby, Z-U-B-Y, at checkout for 20% off any order. That's DriveThruHistory.com/Zuby. Go check it out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Two for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we've got on my friend. He is an entrepreneur. He is also the host of the Brilliant Modern Wisdom podcast, which I have featured on. And this is, of course, Chris Williamson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Pleasure to be here.
Always, man. So I've done a brief intro right there, man. But for people who are not familiar with you, let them know a little bit about you.
Cool. So my name's Chris Williamson. I'm a podcaster from the north of the UK. I have been a club promoter for 14 years. So I've seen a million drunk people go in and out of nightclubs, which is a very unique insight into human nature. Was quite a party boy, like that classic club promoter. Everyone knows it, you know, big around town, like that kind of guy for a while. Did a bit of reality TV. So I was on Take Me Out, which is quite a sort of big dating show on mainstream TV. Then I was the first person through the doors of Love Island season one, which again was another unique experience. Blue tick on Twitter, you know, all the big ones. And then kind of realized just after Love Island that I was missing something. I wasn't really satisfying my curiosity in the way that I needed to. So started to consume more mindful content that was introspective and made me reflect on myself. And I think a lot of people, especially guys, I think, will find in their late 20s that they reach this point. I call it the fitness menopause, but there's a wisdom menopause that you come across as well, where you just think, man, I'm not aligned with sort of what's going on, what I want to do. I'm not speaking my truth forward here. Spent a bit of time doing stuff. Started the podcast 3 years ago. Been very fortunate to speak to 220 amazing people, yourself included. And that brings me right up to this moment now where I'm speaking to you.
Awesome, man. Well, there's a lot to get into right there. So first of all, tell us a little bit about the club promotion stuff. How did you even get into that?
Classic university student, managed to spend most of my loan within Freshers Week, sat down in a seminar next to my would-be business partner. And 14 years later, we've still not got rid of each other. So literally sat down next to him, said, I'm skint, I need a job. He said, I can get you a flyering job. Do you want to come fly for a company? And I did. And that was it. I went flyer boy, junior event manager, senior event manager, got my first franchise at 19, which was Carnage, which is like a big t-shirt bar crawl. Anyone who went to uni sort of between 2006 and 2012 will know what that is.
Those obnoxious pink t-shirts.
That's the one, man. That was me.
Yeah, that was you. Okay, we need to have words, man.
So yeah, that was a real sort of formative part of my upbringing. I love business. I've really found a joy in being competent at something. And obviously the finances are a big part of that, but I just felt like I had an identity. But after a while, I started to attach my sense of identity to the success of the business. Club promo is a very anxiogenic industry to be in. It's always super fickle. Everyone that's listening knows, like, last week that was the cool place to be, but in 2 weeks' time no one goes because it's not cool anymore. Which, like, no one drops the iPhone because Tim Cook, like, wore the wrong pair of trainers or whatever, or said something weird. Do you know what I mean? Like, so it's such a fickle industry, and it's just a unique upbringing to go through that with formative years. But I loved it, man. It's been a huge part of my life that's shaped the way that I get to see things. Obviously, I've seen human nature at its best and its worst when you're watching people pile out of a club at 3 a.m. But yeah, it's very, very unique opportunity to observe people and business.
Gotcha. What was what would you say are a couple of things that you learned from that experience? Because, like, I'm not personally a huge fan of nightclubs, but I think that they're a very fascinating place in a lot of ways. Like, the rare times I am in a nightclub, I almost feel like one of these, David Attenborough types who's sort of observing animals in their habitat and is sort of, you know, watching the males trying to mate with the females and is sort of seeing the social dynamics and everything like that. And I just think nightclubs are just really bizarre when it comes to the way that people behave. And even the fundamental concept of people sort of just paying money to go into a very loud, noisy room and drink alcohol and be surrounded by strangers. I find the whole thing quite fascinating. So what are some of the sort of key takeaways or things you feel that you've learned from that deep sort of insider experience?
Oh, dude, it's been immersive. I've been in the trenches. You know, I've served my time. I've stood on the front door of 1,000 club nights.
Wow.
So I did, like, 208 Saturdays in a row without a break. So all my holidays for, like, throughout a bunch of years were four-day holidays that I'd come back and get ready. What have I learned? Nothing interesting or worthwhile happens after 1:30 a.m.
That is fair enough.
So if you're on a night out and you're starting to get towards your late 20s or 30s or whatever, and you think, I don't really have it in me to stay until 3 a.m, just leave at 1:00. Nothing interesting happens after 1:00, I promise you. It's just this shuffling, slumpy affair where people either, like, fight or kiss each other to death, and nothing kind of goes on. So that's an interesting part. You mentioned about the David Attenborough observation effect. You can certainly see, if you look at it in the cold light of sobriety, stood on the door in a big coat, you can certainly see some reflections of the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever watched two guys who've been kicked out for fighting, they'll get thrown out outside, then they'll turn and face each other, and then they'll start to circle like that. The same way that stags do. So stags circle each other like this, and then what they'll do is they'll test each other's strength. So they'll walk up and they'll push, and they'll walk up and they'll push, and then maybe they'll go to the push again. And dude, I'm just watching like some, so you're fighting over two deer. Yeah. There's two deers over the far side. So that's particularly interesting. You don't need to have alcohol to have a good night, which is something that would surprise a lot of people, especially if you're from the north of the UK, especially if you know me from, like, my early 20s, because I was like a party boy. Yeah. You can have a great night out without drinking, which is 85% of the enjoyment with 0% of the hangover, which is an unbelievable investment as far as I'm concerned. So I've been a big advocate. Dude, I've been a huge advocate of sobriety for the last few years. I never had a drinking problem. I drank maybe once a fortnight. It's a little bit, I always make the analogy, if you spend your spare time as a club promoter going on nights out, it's a little bit like being a porn star and coming home just to have sex. What other people do for fun for you is work. So it might seem like, hey, man, what are you doing this weekend? Do you fancy going on a night out? And I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, that's what I did all week.
Yeah.
Like, I really, really fancy bird watching, or, you know, like whatever. Some other alternative.
Yeah. So, you can bird watch in the club too, but it's a little different.
Nice. So yeah, not needing alcohol is a big sort of red pill to swallow.
Okay.
And especially forcing yourself to develop social confidence without alcohol, for the opposite sex, for making new friends, even for ordering drinks at a bar. I know people that are nervous to order drinks off a waitress or off a barman without a drink. They need like Dutch courage to go and order a drink to get more Dutch courage. And you're never forced to cultivate that if you always rely on alcohol as this supporting structure. So you can get rid of that. There's a whole host of weird and wonderful stories, but those are kind of the most publicly acceptable ones, I think.
No, fair enough. Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, I don't drink. I mean, I've never been a big drinker, but I pretty much became teetotal, I don't know, around 21, 22. I'm glad you said that, because I've been trying to explain to people for a long time that you don't need. In fact, I think one of the weird things about British culture specifically is the way people do use alcohol as a crutch. Like, I don't generally have a problem with people drinking, but I think that if you can't go to the bar or speak to somebody or go to the dance floor or whatever, unless you are drunk, then to me, that's a problem, because then you're using it as a crutch. And as soon as you don't have that, then you can't really function and participate properly in society. I have a theory on why I think that people are like that in the UK, but I don't know what your thoughts
are. We want to hear.
Okay. My theory is that in the UK, compared to even some other Western countries, but compared to a lot of countries around the world, I think people are very, on average, I think people are quite inhibited and very, you know, it's very inwardly polite culture. People are very sort of restrained in their behavior. Like, you know, even between the UK and America, you always hear British people say Americans are very loud, they're very, you know, boisterous, they're this, they're that, right? They're more like that. But British people in general are very sort of inhibited and reserved, which is, you know, generally a good thing. But I think that because of that, when people do drink, it's sort of like, I don't know, if you imagine almost like a wavelength pattern, and people are kind of normally there, and then it sort of spikes. The spikes and dips are a lot harder. Whereas in cultures, I don't know, in say some warmer countries, in parts of Africa, South America, even more Mediterranean European countries, where people are a bit more extroverted and are going out more and socializing more and are a bit less reserved in general, I think there's less of that desire to sort of fully come out of that shell, because they're always a little bit more out of it.
Now, like, dude, if you're Italian, you're in party mode at 9 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's sort of what I mean. So I don't think they have the same, because here it's a real binge drinking culture, isn't it? Like, people drink all over the world, but it's a bit more, it's more moderated. It's like, okay, a glass of wine here, a beer there. Whereas in the UK, it's like people go out, not everybody, right? But a lot of people go out like, I want to get wasted this weekend. Like, I'm going to drink until I'm paralytic. And I'm kind of like, okay, that's a strange goal, but, you know, you do you kind of thing. Just don't kill yourself.
I think you're onto something. I think there's maybe a couple of elements that I would add on, so we can combine these two hypotheses into a master hypothesis. My reasons that I think people drink in the UK, the weather isn't very good. Mm-hmm. There's not an awful lot that you can do in the UK. Nights are long in the wintertime, which means that we don't have the same variety of landscapes that you do in America. You know, we're landlocked, waterlocked on all sides. I can't drive for more than probably 6 hours in any direction without being in an ocean. I can't go boating. You know, no one's friend's got a boat where you can go wakeboarding. There's like one guy who's got a wakeboard in the UK. And he'll be listening. That's me. John, invite me and Zuby out on your wakeboard. First off, I think that there's not a whole lot for people to do, so they kind of rely on that drinking culture. I also sadly think that there isn't as much upward mobility in the UK as there is elsewhere. You know, if you're in Germany, you're surrounded by other countries that you can just drive to. I think there's something about being such a small island that's very densely populated with such a long history, mm-hmm. a long heritage. People have more of a sense, perhaps subconscious, perhaps conscious, that they can't like change much. That upward mobility, personal sovereignty thing is, especially in the north, working class cities in the north, is real prevalent. I'm from Stockton originally, which is like a town famous only for having the highest teen pregnancy rate in the UK. It's certainly something, yeah. We lost the highest density of prostitutes award a few years ago, which was obviously to the shame of everyone.
Who measures that?
I'm
one?
Not sure. I don't know. I don't want to know.
How do they, sir? You know when you see certain data points and I'm like, who measured that? Like, how did you come up with that statistic?
I agree. Yeah. So I think that's part of it. And more than that, it's just the subculture, man. Yeah. Like that louty, very kind of weekend warrior lifestyle. When you haven't got much else going on, when you can't go to the beach because you're in, you know, Manchester and it's freezing cold or whatever it might be. I think that combined with what you've spoken about might be a good reason why people tend to binge.
Yeah, I think you're right. And because do you know where else I've been, which is very similar in that regard? Iceland. Very similar drinking
culture.
I've
been to Iceland. Only difference is that everything costs £9,000.
Exactly. Yeah. If I knew that in advance, fortunately. So when I went to Iceland, I went to Asda the day before I flew, and I literally bought food. So I think I ate like two meals out there because the prices were eye-watering.
Is insane. So I was in a club in Iceland, and I watched a guy get a huge bottle show in this nightclub in Iceland, and I'm thinking they've stopped the music, they've got the sparklers out, like this guy has dropped some serious cash here. And I'm thinking there's going to be a Jeroboam of Moe, there's going to be a huge bunch of champagne, there'll probably be some Bel Air, huge bottle of Grey Goose, one 70cl bottle of Smirnoff red label. I'm like, bro, that's £10 in an off license. But in the club, it was like £250. They're like, this guy's balling. I'm like, no, he's not. He's a student. He's a student in the UK. It's just the fact that you guys are still recovering from a financial crash a couple of years ago. Unbelievable.
That's mental, man. So how did you end up on Take Me Out? Wait, which one came first? Take Me Out or Love Island? Which was first?
That's like chicken or the egg, isn't it? Take Me Out was the first one. So I've been a commercial model for most of my life, but basically anything for a bit of extra cash. So I like DJ'd for a bit, or I do this for a bit. Like it's just,
you might want to caveat that one, but yeah.
Well, yeah. haven't started an OnlyFans yet, which is, despite the fact I've been trying to encourage Douglas Murray to begin one, I think Douglas Murray and Gad Saad would crush it on OnlyFans. Don't bother with Patreon. I just want topless photos of Gad Saad and Douglas Murray workout videos. I reckon.
Yeah, Douglas Murray's got it. He's got an hench recently, hasn't he?
I saw
him one time in one interview. I was like, wait, hang on. I was like, okay. Someone's been lifting.
Did you see that he posted a photo that everyone accused him of posting a thirst pic?
I don't think
it went semi-viral on Twitter, but the weird thing is that the location of the thirst pic was in the study that Trotsky was assassinated in. So like if you were going to pick a location to post a thirst pic from, like the study of Trotsky's assassination probably wouldn't be anyway, enough about Douglas Murray and Gad Saad getting naked. Commercial model, Take Me Out often go to those sorts of places because people are comfortable on camera and they just want easy access to people. So I did that. That was fun. Got to meet Paddy McGuinness, went to the Isle of Fernando's. I got taken home by the Guardia Civil, so the Spanish military police.
What happened?
I woke up on the central reservation of Tenerife's largest motorway. I'd gone a full send the night before, and that caused me to wake up with no phone, no money, no idea where I was or where the hotel was because I'd just been with the film crew. But I'd obviously wandered off, went to some after party with the barman from the bar that we were in where we were filming. And then woke up. So that was fun. And then the same casting team from that does Love Island. So two, 3 years later, hey, man, we're casting for another show. Do you want to come and try this out? And before I know it, I'm like walking through the doors. Like, Wow. Okay. So that was it.
Okay. Well, talk us through this. What was the experience on, firstly, can people watch this on YouTube or is it available anywhere?
If you're in America, it is now on like Hulu or Netflix over there, which means that people are from America are asking me and grilling me about things I did 5.5 years ago when I can't remember what I had for breakfast. Wow. So like, oh, okay, well, so why is it that you didn't like Danielle?
That's so funny.
I have no idea what. So anyway, it was interesting, man. Like I enjoyed the experience, but the thing that people don't see, especially about reality TV that's filmed in real time like that, is it's really, really boring. It looks, because of the everyone's got like a super Instagram filter on, you got a great tan, and obviously there's like a Justin Bieber beat in the background over everything. Yeah. Like it looks real fun, but it's actually quite boring because you only get to talk about the situations. Me and you like the same girl, so for the next day we have to talk about whether you're going to get with her or whether I'm going to get with her, because we can't talk about the mutual friend we have that's outside of the villa because that's not publishable content.
Okay.
So the producers will come in and say, look guys, like this really, we can't air any of this, this isn't very good, and everyone's there to get on TV, which means it becomes this kind of Fisherian runaway selection thing of who can cause more drama or involve themselves in more situations. And that's not really my bag. So I was like, I was spending time really admiring the fact that the Milky Way is super visible from the south coast of Menorca at that time of the year, but didn't really sort of ingratiate myself with it wasn't the reason that you're there, right? You're not there to do stargazing. You're supposed to be,
causing drama.
Girl gazing, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough, man. I mean, what was that? I mean, you've kind of touched on it, but I mean, what was the experience like? I mean, I've never actually seen Love Island. I'm quite proud of this, just like I'm proud of the fact I don't know what McDonald's tastes like.
I advise you to keep that the same for both of those.
Yeah.
We'll know that you've gone off. I love that Zuby going off the rails is us finding out that you've ordered a Big Mac while he watches Love Island.
Yeah, that'll be it, man.
Send down. Someone round to his house. I'm really concerned about him. I've noticed on Deliveroo that he's just ordered a McDonald's and there's Love Island's queued on Netflix.
You know me, Chris, man. I'm the king of controversy, man. I always joke. I'm like the least controversial person who maybe Jordan Peterson, but
I think
I feel like I'm one of the least controversial people on earth who somehow happens to be
embroiled in controversy on a daily basis. Yes.
Okay, like man, I'm just kind of chilling here, just trying to, you know.
Everyone that's listening that has that friend though, right? You've got like two different types of friends and they bifurcate. You've got the one friend that just loves drama. Oh my God, did you see what that? And they're the ones that need to go on Love Island. Like they're the ones that need to apply to Love Island. And then you've got the other ones who see drama and just run away. Yeah. And like that does not sound like me at all. But apparently there's you as well, which is like, I don't even know where you sit. You're somewhere in between the two, wearing a trench coat and a like big glasses and a fake nose and a mustache, like as a below the line spy. But yeah, so the experience is really unique. Anyone that's ever watched any reality TV, I'm sure you'll have seen videos of Big Brother back in the day,
Definitely.
Where they've got like the cameras in the ceiling. The fascinating thing is that there's a lot of psychology that goes into making a reality TV show naturalistic. So me and you are talking on the set, but they don't want me and you to be conscious of the fact there's cameras there, or else we're going to adjust the way that we talk.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have it. It'll be underneath a plant pot, like a little swivel camera. And then there'll be two big long lens booms, one over each shoulder. But you won't be able to see that. It'll be outside of the grounds. It'll be, you know, like 100 yards away, like football cameras.
Okay.
And then there'll be like a little one in the light. That light won't be a light. That'll actually be another little swivel one there. And then there'll be something else here. And we're always mic'd up. And that was the bit that fascinated me. Like I was so much more interested in the production than I was in the actual show. Another weird thing, I'll drop some Love Island facts for people that are fans of the show.
Yeah,
we never knew what the time was. So the clocks that were in the villa were always the wrong time. Anyone who ever came in had changed their watch so that it didn't tell us the right time. I think the reason for that is so that they could control our sleep and wake pattern more effectively, so that we didn't know when we were going to bed or when we were getting up. Because a lot of the time, if the guys were really excitable, they wouldn't sleep for long enough. So not allowing you to know, oh, well, I've had 4 hours, that'll be fine. And then you run out of gas later on. Or perhaps the reverse, if they needed to push us a bit harder. We had no contact with the outside world, which was interesting. There is someone listening to your mic 24 hours a day, even when you're asleep. So they do it in different shifts of maybe between 6 and 8 hours. And there'll just be a team of people that are like Zuby. So 3 or 4 people listen to you for a month. Wow. Every word that comes out of your mouth, every fart sound that you make in the bathroom, every like, do you know what I mean? Like everything, every single sound, which is in the vicinity of that microphone. So I'd been on the show 4 and a bit weeks or whatever it was, came off and sat down in the canteen to do the checkout interview, which is like match.com want to say, ask you some viewer questions and blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And two guys came up and sat down to the production team. And they were like, hey, Chris, just wanted to sort of introduce ourselves. We're two of the sound engineers. Like, we've listened to you constantly for the last 4 weeks. Like, oh, wow. Like, I'm sorry, but also like, hi, nice to meet you. And they said, there was this thing where you were talking about Kip Thorne's physics book that was the underwritten theory behind why Interstellar had accurate physics depictions. He was the consultant physicist. Would you just be able to tell us a bit? I'm like, that is a conversation that was so flippant. And you just have it, you know what I mean? You just have a chat on the way to the bus stop or whatever it might be. And someone then brings it up 4 weeks later. So that was like kind of charming and unique. But yeah, man, it's a good experience. There's not many things left that not many people have done.
Sure.
Like, I always make this, it's not an equivocacy, but more people have been to the top of Everest than have been on Love Island. Mm. Not saying that they're the same sort of experience, but my point is there aren't many things left that not many people have done.
Yeah.
And to have that is cool. Like, I look on it back with fond memories.
Yeah. What was it like when you came out? Because like I said, I don't watch the show myself, but I do know that it's a popular show. I know that, you know, people come out of it and gain some sort of celebrity status, at least within a certain community, etc. So what was that like for you?
Thankfully, I don't know whether it's thankfully, man. I still don't have the answer to this. The first season was 10 times less popular than the second, which was 10 times less popular than the third. So it was like this sort of exponential return on how much the public was interested. So I always call the first season like a full cost dress rehearsal that they happened to publish. But there was a little bit of attention. You get the blue tick, you do a bit. But in terms of like follower growth and clout, there's not really that much. Like, even the guy that won came off with like 100,000 followers. You can go on for a day and get 200,000 now. Like, as soon as they go on, everyone just knows that what to do is to go and have a nosy. Oh my God, like, he knows that person. I know him. What's he like? Blah, blah, blah. Like, that's just what happens. And the winners come off with 2 million plus.
Yeah.
And they're set for life. You know, they have a 1 million. I think someone that won a couple of years ago got a £1 million Boohoo deal.
Oh, wow.
Like, you go in as a nobody, you come out 6 weeks later and are worth a mil.
Yeah.
There's not many places that you can, you know, 6 weeks work for £1 million is,
yeah,
is not bad. But it's difficult to cast that off for some of the guys like myself. Like, I want to be able to sit down with Douglas Murray or Robert Greene or Ryan Holiday, all these guys I have on the show. And I never, ever, ever want them to go back to their wife or partner or whatever it might be and say, I had a good chat with this guy from Love Island earlier on. But I'm like, oh, come on. So that kind of casting that off has been interesting. It's been an interesting journey since then.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, you don't want it to be, you don't want it to be the thing that defines you for forever, right? I mean, you want people to know you for you and for your work. And you know, let's be honest. I mean, Love Island, it's, from what I see, it's not like the deepest show. It's not like you're showcasing your intellect and your wisdom and your, you know, sort of most intriguing qualities as a human being. It's a fairly superficial endeavor. So, you know, maybe that's enough for some people, but I know, you know, you're an intelligent guy. You like having these deep conversations, et cetera. And that leads into the Modern Wisdom podcast. So what was it that made you want to create it to begin with?
I was featured on a show after I came off Love Island. My buddies from Propane Fitness run a great podcast, and they said, hey, do you want to come and do this? I was like, I've never done one before. That sounds good. And I just loved it, man. Like, I adore this platform. I know it's a cliche now. There was this meme floating around a while ago that you might have seen where it was 4 white guys smoke a joint, ... we should start a podcast. Like, the and that kind of does feel a little bit like what it is, but I just adored the opportunity to have deep conversations. It satisfied my curiosity. And I thought, wow, I really enjoy this. I want to do it myself. I should start my own show and then I can do it as much as I want. Mm-hmm. Got really fortunate. Being a club promoter, It's probably the same as being an accountant or like a dentist. Everyone owes you a favor. Like there's everybody owes you a favor somewhere down the line. Or like you as a rapper, like everyone's asked you for guest list at some point. Yeah. And you're like, you know when that, because I know that you know Stephen Fry's daughter or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's this bizarre kind of 6 degrees of separation thing. And that's how you get like Matthew McConaughey on your podcast or something like that.
Nice. Have you had him on?
No, but Michaela Peterson has him coming on in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, okay, okay.
A family friend, which is why he's in my head, which is just going to be, all right. Like, you know, what a guy. Have on Matthew McConaughey.
That's cool.
I love him. So yeah, started it and then called in some favors, got some good names, and then away we go.
Awesome, man. And how did you go about starting it? Because I know there's, you know, I know how to start a podcast. Of course, I have one. But, you know, there are a lot of people listening who, especially this year, right, in 2020, lots of people are wanting to explore different opportunities. People have these ideas, whatever. But people get stuck on starting. You know, I often tell people, like, look, just get started. It doesn't need to be perfect. You don't need some amazing microphone or amazing camera, whatever. Just begin, you know, start with what you have. But a lot of people struggle to get over that initial barrier. So was that something that you struggled with? And then what's the journey been like? Because we all know that, you know, this stuff starts really, really slow. As we record this, you were just telling me before we started recording that just in the past month or 2 months or something that you've had more listens on your podcast than you did in the first 2 years combined, which is just phenomenal exponential growth. And I imagine it's going to, you know, in 2 years time, you'll be looking back on the numbers you're doing now and you'll
peasant
be like, oh,
numbers
wow.
That I'm doing this month. Yeah, exactly.
So
first things first, like everything when you start something sucks. Everything that you do when you begin, it sucks. Mm. If there's someone listening that wants to know exactly how to start a podcast, Tim Ferriss's How to Start a Podcast from late 2017 is phenomenal. You can hack your way to the top of the iTunes market, the iTunes chart, like within your first couple of weeks of launch, which is really good because then you can use that. But I used a Blue Yeti, which I can see that you've got in front of you, which is a wonderful microphone. And I used the camera on my laptop, Skype, call recorder for Skype, which is an Ecamm Movies tool plugin, put it through GarageBand, use a male radio noisy plugin, Orphonic, which is a mastering program. I run it through that. Libsyn is the way that I host it, and I published once a week, and I just didn't stop, and that was it. It feels now like I started early, but even at the time, I minced around about, is it going to be called Crushing a Tuesday? Is it going to be called Mind and Matter? Is it going to be called this, and this? Mm-hmm. And then one night, 2 a.m, woke up, Modern Wisdom. I've done brands my whole life. It's the one time I've had like a flash of inspiration.
Yeah.
Modern Wisdom, I was like, that's it. I've got it. Got one logo done, and that was all, man. Like, and just do it consistently. Pick a day of the week and become a part of people's routine. So I did every Monday. Mm-hmm. Then I wanted to publish more. So I did every Monday, Thursday. Then at the start of lockdown, I wanted to publish more. So Monday, Thursday, Saturday. And we do clips 3 days a week as well. So like Sunday's the only day that the video guy gets off.
Yeah.
But you can start it with 200 quid.
Mm-hmm.
And £15 a month of hosting fees, and you have your podcast on the same place as myself, as you, as Rogan, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, iTunes, everything.
Yeah.
And it's good, and if you enjoy having conversations, there's no better place to do it.
Yeah, agreed, man. Most definitely. That's a lot of the same reasons I wanted to start one, because of course being a professional musician, you know, the music satisfies part of my brain, but it doesn't satisfy all of it. And I love having deep conversations. I'm always having deep conversations with my friends, with my family, etc. And I was like, man, and you know, I was obviously a fan of a lot of other podcasts, and I was like, man, you know, it would be cool to just, why don't I just create my own? And like yourself, I mean, I spent a lot of maybe 10 months in 2018 umming and ahhing and back and forth things, thinking, okay, should I do a music podcast? Should I do a fitness podcast? Should I do a mindset, self-improvement? Like, what should the theme be? You know, and I was stuck on it. And then beginning of, you know, January 2019 is when I started. I just said, okay, New Year's resolution. I remember
dicking around.
I'm going to start a podcast, and I'm going to make, what did I say to begin with? I think I said I'll make 50 episodes. And then I had a goal. I remember my goals beginning of 2019. I was like, I want to reach 10,000 followers on Instagram, 30,000 on Twitter, 10K or 20K on YouTube. And then I think by April, I destroyed all of my New Year's resolutions. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's sort of two things going on here. And I think that your ascendance through social media is a wonderful story, but is so unbelievably rapid that it seems almost as if it couldn't be replicated. Whereas every person that I know has the hockey stick analogy. Mm-hmm. You know, you just plug away at stuff. You mentioned before about the plays for Modern Wisdom, where it's like, we'll do more this month in 28 days than I did in the first 2 years that I had the show.
Wow.
Which makes the first 2 years feel like a waste of time. But obviously those first 2 years lead up to this. Mm-hmm. James Clear has this beautiful story, Kansas City football team. And they have this quote on the wall of the dressing room. A stonemason knows that it isn't the 100th blow that cracked the stone, but the 99 that came before it.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize the way that sort of that exponential return comes back to you, because if it sucks for you, it sucks for every other person that's in that industry, as a rapper, as a musician, as an artist, as whatever. And that resistance that you're feeling is felt by everyone.
Mm.
So by getting through that resistance, you are self-selecting to be the 1%, even if you totally suck.
Yep.
Even if you're absolutely terrible, which you won't be.
Yeah.
But even if you are, you're self-selecting because you're prepared to push yourself through that level of discomfort. And recently had Stephen Pressfield, War of Art and Turning Pro, on the show. He talks a lot about this stuff. Resistance is always going to be there. You'll have it when you're writing a song.
Mm-hmm.
Someone will have it when they're trying to do a blog. The best writers on the planet, Ryan Holiday, in his new book, Ryan Holiday will have had resistance. He'll have had writer's block. He'll have woken up one morning and wanted to do anything other than be a writer.
Mm.
And if you can get through it, that is what differentiates you. And that's a really interesting thing because it takes talent out of the equation. You're like, look, can I just suffer a little bit? And I think that a lot of people presume that the most talented or the most successful people in the world perhaps don't feel suffering the same way that everyone else does, or feel discomfort or boredom. Another James Clear analogy from Atomic Habits, which is wonderful, talked to the head of the Chinese weightlifting team in their biggest improvement period. And he said, what is it that separates the good from the great, the absolute best? And he says, it's the athletes who are prepared to deal with the boredom of training day in, day out.
Mm.
And that removes all of the things that we think about success. It's not about that. It's not about these people. Matt Fraser, you know, 4 times CrossFit Games champion, fittest man on the planet. He doesn't love going in and doing a 1 hour concept two rower test. No one loves that. No one gets gassed for that on a morning, but Matt's prepared to go do it. Mm-hmm. So are you prepared to go and do it? Are you prepared to go and coach the football team again, to go and do another set, another push-pull-leg session? Are you prepared to go and do more accessory work that just drives your head into the ground, or to try and learn that chord that you just can't get no matter how hard you do it? And if you do, then you come out the other side.
Yeah, most definitely, man. I mean, yeah, there's a lot there. And I mean, you sort of, I don't know whether intentionally or inadvertently, you used like a gym analogy, right? And part of why I love the gym and why I love resistance training in particular, why I love lifting weights is, you know, not just to be jacked and have a six pack or whatever, but because it's the same, you just apply that to everything in life, right? Reps. You said repetitions, right? You put in, how do you get good at something? You put in the reps, right? You just keep on each individual repetition on a bench press or on a squat or on a deadlift that isn't going to do much, just like you were saying with the hammer striking, right? But over a period of time, over 6 months, over a year, over 5 years, over 10 years, it's like, whoa, that's what created it. And if you can deal with that resilience, it teaches you consistency, discipline, perseverance, everything it takes to build an impressive physique is the same mentally. It's the same thing it takes to make a good, successful podcast. It's the same thing it takes to become a successful musician, a successful entrepreneur, business owner, or whatever. You have to get through what you said, right? I like to say, embrace the suck, right? You just have to accept it's gonna suck. Just stop focusing on the outcome, and just focus on the process. Just get the process right. It might be boring. It won't be fun. You're probably not going to see any sort of impressive results for a very, very long period of time, but you've just got to embrace that, embrace the process, get through it. And like you said, you can often win just by being the person who keeps going. Just by being the person who keeps going.
Standing. Yeah. Yeah. That's it, man. There's a really interesting, you touched on the gym and how it relates to sort of being conscientious. It's a really interesting evolutionary psychology insight into why women are attracted to men with muscles, which is a few things. Firstly, it shows that the man can get surplus calories, which evolutionarily would have been really, really rare. To have seen a non-skinny human, unless they had like a weird thyroid problem, would have been almost impossible. We didn't have a surplus. We had a scarcity. Yeah. And that hasn't been deprogrammed. But the most important thing, the thing that I thought was really fascinating, is that someone who is in good condition from the gym has to be conscientious. They have to have agency. They have to be self-disciplined. These are all wonderful traits to find in a partner. You want to have someone who, at the first challenge in your relationship, isn't going to just throw their hands up and say, I quit. You don't want someone who, at the first temptation from another potential partner or whatever, the same way they do with the donut, is just going to fold and say, yeah, temptation is easier. Take the easy route. So using your physique as an objective outward display of internally what's going on is one of the few ways you can do it. I can't tell how mindful someone is by looking at them. You can have logged 10,000 hours of meditation, but there's no objective, externalized, socialized measure of that.
No.
But there is with the way that you look. You know, there is with your bank account as well. How much have you managed to quantify your wealth?
Sure.
And with a couple of other things, but it's a good selector, man. I think,
yeah, most definitely.
Anyone that's listening to this and doesn't know that they should be doing resistance training
gym.
After
go to the gym. Yeah, buy my book. Listen to Chris's podcast. Yeah, I was going to
say link in show notes. Go buy Zuby's book. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Do you know what? To me, it's like, okay, besides the time and the fact that I guess it's hard, which some people consider a downside, but it's one thing that to me has like, it's all upside. Like as long as you can do it. And I look, everyone can do it, but besides that temporary thing of, you know, the few hours a week that you may spend lifting some weights and feeling some discomfort, it's like, it's weird when I get people ask me like, oh, what's the point? Like, what's the point of doing resistance training? Like, what's the point of lifting weights? Oh, you don't need to be that strong. What's the point of that? I'm like, oh my gosh, where do I begin? It's like, every facet of your life.
I wouldn't have an answer to it.
Yeah.
Everything. Like, it's so obvious. But yeah, man, like even with places like the gym and pure gym and stuff like that, it's £13 for a 24-hour membership.
Yeah.
Like that's two drinks on a night out. That's not even a meal. That's not even a main in an all right restaurant. So yeah dude, I think Douglas Murray lifts weights. That's all you need to know. If it's good enough for Gad Saad and Douglas Murray, good enough for you. Next point.
I love that, man. I mean, with some of the guests you've had on your show, man, you've had you've had some of the greatest and most interesting thinkers in the world. You know, you've mentioned Gad Saad, you've mentioned Douglas Murray, you know, a whole bunch of other a lot of people, some of whom I've had the pleasure to speak to as well. And there's been, how would I put it? You know, some of the people you speak to are deemed controversial in this modern world that we live in, you know, where sort of everything is controversial. It seems like just using logic and reason and being willing to engage with ideas and actually converse with them is somehow controversial. So number one, I guess, what are your thoughts on that in general? But number two, because I know this is a question, you know, you ask your guests, but where do you see it going? How do you think that society and culture and the political climate and all that, say, maybe in the UK, but also in the US and the West in general, where do you think it's going? Do you think that things are going to get better, get worse, maybe a bit of both? What are your thoughts on the general climate?
It's a good question, man. I think, sadly, even though we're in the UK, there will be a ripple effect of what happens in November to us over in the UK. We're seeing that BLM protests occurred over here. We've generally had kind of like heightened tensions with even our general election, our most recent general election was like, America kicks off when they have an election. That's cool. That's the way it works. Like when you've got 330 million people doing anything and they're all quite like everyone from America, even the most Karen-y Karen from America sounds kind of polished on Instagram or like on a video just because they got a cool accent and they're always shouting about something. So
Funny because they think the same about British people.
Well, that's it. The competitive advantage of having a foreign accent that the other people can understand is phenomenal. My primary interest in life is maximizing personal agency. Mm. I want people to be in full control of their life, consciously designing the things that they do. I don't want them to be dealing with societal norms, past traumas, genetic predispositions, path of least resistance. I don't want any of that. And that was the primary reason I started Modern Wisdom. So I was speaking to people like James Clear, who would talk about designing habits, or Robert Greene on human nature, or Ryan Holiday about stoicism and resilience and stuff like that. But you're right. Even me as someone who I've never voted, so I have no primary natural interest in politics.
Sure.
Douglas Murray's been on the show twice. Stefan Molyneux came back on the show after he was banned from YouTube.
Yeah.
So I think everyone is getting dragged into a political discussion at the moment. Mm. The best thing that you can do for me is to do some self-work, work out what your values are. What do you genuinely value in life? I value curiosity, adventure, self-development, excellence, and self-care. Those are my five core values. So I build my life around that. But if you don't know what yours are and someone comes in with a very seductive political position, you're very quickly going to bend to that. And that's quite dangerous because you're living their life. You're not living yours.
Yeah.
So I think that personal agency and sovereignty is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. I think that having genuine curiosity for other people's points of view helps to stop you from feeling offended when it doesn't agree. Mm-hmm. Like if everyone on left and right was actually like, okay, I think you're very wrong, but I am so interested to find out why you think that's right.
Yeah.
All of the vitriol stops.
It does.
Which is why curiosity is such a uniquely useful trait. And every podcast, every good podcaster on the planet has it. It's like one of their key traits, right? You just want to find out why. You're the kid who was told to shut up because it's like, why? You mentioned about kind of, I guess, the challenge of platforming controversial voices. Mm. Stefan Molyneux is a perfect example of this, man. Like you know, he's a guy who's had his entire media empire in whatever form it was removed. Million person YouTube channel, all of his Twitter, like everything. He's in like Alex Jones, Milo Yiannopoulos realm gulag, now. Yeah. Like, yeah, he's in the gulag and he hasn't won his duel. So, and I had him on and I got like some 1-star reviews on Apple Podcasts from people saying, can't believe you platformed this guy. And I'm like, dude, come on. Like, the opportunity, it's so cliche to even say it, man. It sounds trite now to be like, look, the best way to counter controversial voices is to let them speak and to then, you know, engage them in proper conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm just sick of it. Like, I really am bored. The last two podcasts I've done that were political, Douglas Murray and Gad Saad, I asked them both the same question. I'm going to ask you it as well. Are you bored of talking about identity politics and or social justice?
Yeah, I was bored before I joined the conversation because I'd been having those conversations since maybe around 2015, 2014, 2015.
You're from the wokest town in the UK, aren't you?
Am I?
Is it Brighton that you're in?
Oh, no, I'm in Southampton.
Southampton, oh, no. That was it. Sorry.
Oh, no, definitely not Brighton. I'm not a Brighton.
Sorry. but that whole like South Coast, I think we spoke about this on DM ages ago. Like Southampton, I think, is like top three woke cities.
Really?
In the UK. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's true. Anyone, tell us in the comments. Tell us in the comments below. I might have got it wrong.
Yeah, definitely Brighton. Definitely Brighton.
Yeah.
But okay. Southampton, I don't know. And Bournemouth votes conservative. Southampton. Is Southampton mainly conservative? I'm not sure.
Someone will tweet us and tell us. Someone knows the statistics for this.
Yeah, Brighton is super woke, though.
You were bored already.
Yeah, I was bored before I joined the conversation. I joined the conversation because I felt a moral compulsion to. I think someone like Gad Saad is a bit like this. I don't think someone like Gad Saad is, you know, on paper, super political, but
it's been conscripted.
Yeah, basically, right? Because like with me, I mean, you gotta remember. I mean, I've been on social media since 2004. I've been on Twitter since 2009. I've been doing my music since 2006. And up until 2018, you know, on a public level, people knew very little about my politics or my views on religion or anything remotely contentious, right? Because I didn't want to rock the boat. I didn't want it to distract from my music. I didn't want to polarize people, etc. So, you know, I talk about that stuff privately, but in a public setting, I wouldn't do it. And do you actually know what the tipping point is for me? Because I think a lot of people don't know this. I think some people wonder how I got involved in the conversation. But in 2018, there's someone I know who at the time was the president of a university of one of the student unions at a university here in the UK. I'm not going to be super specific just because, you know, protect his identity, whatever. But, you know, someone who I know is, you know, very, very social justice-y. You know, we're friends on Facebook. I've met him in real life a couple times, etc. And anyway, there was, he's always posting like bizarre SJW stuff on Facebook, and I typically just ignore it. But there was something that he posted early 2018, which was something along the lines of, I support free speech, but I don't support hate speech, and we must make sure that universities are a safe space from dangerous ideas, and we should be open to debate, but we shouldn't be platforming people whose ideas are harmful, that kind of thing. And I was like, wait a second here.
One
and
step keep in too mind, far, straw yeah, that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, and keep in mind, you know, I've been seeing what's been happening in Canada, in USA. I've seen what happened with Jordan Peterson. I saw what happened with Brett Weinstein at Evergreen. I've been following this conversation. I've been watching the Rubin Report. So I'm like, oh wow, okay, this is close to home, right? And I'm like, and this isn't a random person. This is the president of the student union who is saying, I support free speech, but, right? You know, that but. And so I actually responded to this publicly. And, you know, we both have had, you know, quite a lot of followers and friends on Facebook. So this became quite a public conversation. And I said something along the lines of, you know, if you don't, you know, it's very important for universities to support free speech. You can't just pick and, you know, who's the arbiter? You can't just pick and choose what you consider, you know, right and proper and should be allowed and shouldn't be allowed, et cetera. I can't remember my exact wording. And then he said something along the lines of, you know, free speech doesn't cover hate speech. And I said, okay, well, who sets the bounds for hate speech? What's discovered? And so, anyway, we had a whole back and forth conversation in which he tried to pull in a lot of other people, but the people he kept pulling in actually kept agreeing with me, which was quite funny. And then in the end, he literally said, people like Zuby, who have regressive and harmful views, which could potentially get people killed, should not be allowed on university campuses in the UK. Okay? So according to this person, a student union president, someone like me, should not be allowed on a university campus, right? As reasonable.
You're dangerous, no swear rapping.
right. So, and he literally said that people with views like mine, but keep in mind, in this thread, I hadn't even really spoken about any of my political views. He said, views like yours get people killed. And so I was like, okay, this is where we are. Like, this is not something I can sit on the sidelines of, right?
Conscription service there, yeah.
Exactly. That was actually the thing that dropped for me, where I was like, you know what? We need to push back on this thing. Like, this is before the people, you know, this is before the word woke was really being used. But this, you know, this whole thing, I was like, you know what? I need to go to war a little, right? And from that moment, I just started being a lot more vocal on Twitter, and it started resonating too, right? I just started saying, and I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna put everything out there, but I'm gonna weigh in on some of these conversations. And people just started taking to that, and that's when stuff really started growing for me.
Do you think that you will utilize your audience anytime soon to pivot it away from identity politics?
Yeah, I mean, I already do. I mean, that's
you
not... do,
you're pushing the fitness, like, you guys, yeah, you need to have the... But there is still, you know, there's still that flavor to it, you know, where you've got that. Is that something, are you looking for an out? Are you looking for an exit, kind of? Do you know what I mean?
I get you. You know, not really. I mean, it doesn't wear me down as much as it may weigh down other people, because to me, it's a very small percentage of what I talk about, I think, and what I do in general. Like, I'm not the identity politics, racial politics in general guy. Like, that's not the thing that's floating around my head all day. I'm a lot more interested in, you know, human psychology and society and cult. Like, I consider myself more of a cultural, if I'm any kind of warrior, I'd consider myself more of a cultural warrior than a political warrior. But as you know, there's a bit of a blur there. And it's very difficult to talk about society and culture and morality and what's going on, what's happening in the future. It's hard to talk about all that without it, you know, veering into politics, without it veering into religion, etc., because these things are all intertwined. Like, on a deep political level or on a party political level, I don't talk about politics much in terms of sort of party politics. Like, you won't hear me talking a lot about the Tories did this,
fiscal
and Labour did that.
Of this, blah,
yeah,
blah,
or yeah. Even, you know, the Tory party, the Labour party, the Democrats, the Republicans. Like, I don't even the left and the right. Like, I try actually not to use those terms, because I don't want to play into the sort of false binary and this idea that everyone is, you know, just left or right. I know it's a lot more nuanced and complicated than that. So I personally try not to play into it too much. Sometimes, though, it's like, sometimes I just need to say something, you know, like, say, when I just start seeing, like, stuff just going off the rails. Okay, recently, this Cuties film on Netflix, mm-hmm. right, where they've got 11-year-old girls. You've made a film about 11-year-old girls twerking, right?
Like, did you see Ben Shapiro's breakdown of this?
I did, yes, I did.
Yeah, what were your thoughts on that?
So I get, that's a good point. What were my thoughts on it?
So to kind of preface this, for anyone who doesn't know, Cuties, this Netflix show that's about a girl who's from a very traditional sort of religious background, then gets hypersexualized at a young age in America. And the show is, I think, supposed to be highlighting the fact that increasingly with Instagram culture and stuff like that, that girls are becoming increasingly sexualized early. Mm-hmm. The contention by everyone is that the delivery mechanism for doing that breaks a particular boundary, yes. which should never be broken.
Agreed.
Now, I've not seen the movie. Mm-hmm. I've seen the clip that mm-hmm. everyone who's watching probably seen. But I haven't seen the bit that Ben Shapiro brought up, which is that the girl who's become hypersexualized at 11 years old then breaks down crying, wears a roll-up jumper and puts a scarf on immediately afterwards and runs to her parents. Mm-hmm. It's, I think, supposed to be a call to arms for people to realize this isn't acceptable.
Yeah.
But
do you know what?
The delivery mechanism for it appears to be just so atrocious that people can't handle it. And then there's these things about 600 girls came and practiced twerking in front of these producers.
Yeah, look,
give me your thoughts on Ben's view.
So let me not focus on what Ben said, but my general view on it is that the context doesn't matter to me. Like, you should not have a movie where you have 11-year-old girls, you know, twerking and humping the floor and you know, dressed in certain outfits. And like, the context doesn't matter to me. Just like, I don't think you should have, you don't need to actually torture a puppy in a movie, like actually torture a puppy to get the point across that it's wrong to torture a puppy. And you don't need to actually sexualize a bunch of underage girls. You know, maybe you said 600 auditioned or something. And
that's something I saw.
Okay, probably hundreds. How did they audition? Right. What was the process? Right. Any situation where you're having them, even if they're acting, right, whatever. To me, like, what with me, like, there are a few things that I have like a really hard line on. I think maybe the hardest line is stuff that has to do with children. You see what I mean? Like, if it's adults, and there's a whole bunch of movies and types of entertainment and whatever that I don't like, right? You know, whether it's entertainment or things that exist, and like, there's a lot of stuff that I do not like personally. I may even vehemently disagree with it on a moral level. But if it is adults and it's consenting adults, you know, as long as it is not criminal, I don't need to approve of it. But okay, children, you know, I'm not a father yet, but that's when the inner father within me comes out and I'm just like, no, right? No, the context doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I haven't seen Cuties. It doesn't matter I haven't seen the film. Like, you should not be taking an 11-year-old girl and doing this.
It's not just the context, I think, that you disagree with, but it's the end goal as well. So not only do you disagree with the means, but that the ends aren't worth the means.
No, I don't think the ends are ever worth the means to do that. Look, they could have even made it an animated film, right? If it were an animated film and you didn't actually take all these girls and do this, and you're genuinely trying to make the point that we shouldn't be sexualizing young girls, etc., which is, you know, a fair point. Like, you can do it without actually sexualizing the young girls, right? That's the problem.
It does feel a little bit like being molested by your therapist. Like, yeah. I've come to you for you to try and fix what this problem is, mm-hmm. and the person who I've come to that's supposed to be here to help has done the thing precisely that we were supposed to be stopping. So this is an interesting point for me to try and put across something I've been thinking about a lot recently, mm-hmm. and it relates back to the "Are you bored of social justice" and these debates online. Douglas Murray's been using this term for a little while about we are standing on the precipice, which is an interesting term because I read a book this year called The Precipice by Toby Ord, who's from the Future of Humanities Institute at Oxford University. Okay. So he works on existential risk, civilization-ending catastrophes, meteors, anthropological risks, global warming, bioweapons, nuclear war, threat of malignant artificial intelligence, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Toby Ord's book, he puts the chances that we as a society, as a civilization, survive without causing ourselves an existential threat which permanently downregulates our ability to reach our full potential, the chance that we survive the next century at 1 in 3. The okay. chance that we as a civilization, as a species, reach our full potential, galaxy colonizing, you know, fully actualized, is 1 in 2. Mm-hmm. So the vast, vast, vast majority of a risk, of the risk for us as a civilization occurs within the next 100 years. Like, people who don't understand just how fragile and how much of a knife edge the entire future, trillions of lives, trillions and trillions and trillions of lives, and then the simulations that come off the back of that, and then the fact that we're the only, as far as we're aware, the only species in the entire universe who is able to step into their own morality. Mm. Lion kills lion. I can save both lions by stepping in. I'm the only one that can do that, right? Yeah. The implications are unbelievable, insurmountable, right? Mm-hmm. And the brightest minds on the planet are spending their time telling Netflix not to put 11-year-olds on, or that men with beards who say that they're a woman aren't a woman.
Yep.
I do not want someone with GadSad's polymath background. Dude, that's the first time I swore. I promised myself I wasn't going to swear on this podcast. James Lindsay, PhD in pure mathematics.
Yeah.
Bro, get us to Mars. Stop reading Social Justice. I don't want his time to be taken up, and that's not for me to say that it isn't a worthy investment of his time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it perhaps is, but if we weren't so self-defeating as a species, so small-minded, like, do you realize how tribal and idiotic it is for you to be utilizing the smartest minds on the planet mm-hmm. to get people to click on ads or debate that men aren't women?
Yep.
Like, I want Douglas Murray to be teaching me about the most beautiful passages of literature from the last 500 years so that I can understand the wisdom of the sages of the past. Mm-hmm. I do not want him to re-release, as beautiful as it is, I don't want him to re-release The Madness of Crowds.
Yep.
I don't want him to be singing Nicki Minaj because it highlights the ridiculousness of, like, of this gender imbalance, right?
Yep.
Like, I love the man to bits, but that's not where their energy should be invested. And the worst thing, the worst thing is, like, this year there was a pandemic, man. Mm-hmm. Like, this was the Love Island season one dress rehearsal dry run for, if the mortality on this had been 30%, we'd be really, really screwed.
Yep.
And all that's happened is it's made people want to loot and riot more.
Yep.
Like, No one has felt global cohesion. It doesn't even rain everywhere on the planet at the same time. But I know what it feels like to be in lockdown, say, as someone in Shanghai, the same as someone in Texas, the same as someone in Africa. I know what that feels like. It's united us as a species, and we just blew straight through it. Blew straight through it and back to the same stupid, idiotic, tribal things that we always have. There's a concept called the Great Filter by Robin Hanson, which is a justification for the Fermi paradox. Why have we not seen any aliens? He proposes that there's a particular barrier, great filter, that all civilizations need to get over. Maybe it's wrangling artificial intelligence so that it's compliant and not malicious. Maybe it's not killing yourself with nuclear weapons. Maybe it's global warming. Maybe it's whatever. Maybe it's that all sufficiently intelligent civilizations are so tribal that they spend all of their time, energy, and resources with the best and smartest minds on the planet, however they might be, infighting. Because that's what we're doing. I know that 2020 looks like this technotopia where I can instantly message you and we're, podcasting's amazing and oh my God, you're on reality TV. We're just apes. We're just apes that can step into our own programming by a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. And the fact that we're not utilizing the legacy that all of the humans that came before us have given us right now means that we might waste our future.
Well, I think that's pretty pessimistic, man.
Look, if it stops if it stops people from fighting on the internet, I think
do you know what it is though? It's that the thing, you know, of course Gadsad is putting out his book, right? The Parasitic Mind, which will deal with this. I didn't want to step into this, right? I was happy to not be a public voice on a lot of the things that I now find myself speaking about. But in the absence of those, right, without all the voices that you mentioned, terrible ideas, which in fact increase tribalism and increase resentment and increase hostility, are going unopposed, right? They're just running.
You guys are required soldiers.
Yeah.
You are mercenaries that need to take this stuff down. So, but it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
This bad thing happens, so you need a Zuby. Oh my God, they've done another one. Right, where's Jordan? Mr. Peterson, Dr. Peterson, I require you, please. And then, oh my God, they've done it again. Right, Rogan, Ruben, get yourself. Do you know what I mean?
I hear you.
It's like the Avengers. And you're like compiling this list of people who have the capacity to understand what's going on in a platform and not enough fear to bother to do it.
Yeah.
But like, I shouldn't have to have this. Shouldn't be the way that it is, man.
I hear you, man. But you know, the truth is that life, especially when you're talking about millions or you're talking about billions of people, is life and the human existence is never really about what things should be. You know, if the world were the way I think it should be, stuff would look real different. Stuff would look really, really different. In fact, it would look different for every single individual. So it sort of circles back around to what we were saying, right? You know, individual agency, self-empowerment, self-improvement, etc. The best that you and I can do is be the best versions of ourselves that we can be and encourage other people to do the same, which is also a big part of my message, right? You know, trying to break people out of victimhood mindset, trying to get people to not see each other by the color of their skin or by their gender or their sexuality, right?
I loved your height thing that you did the other week. Was it height or shoe size?
Height and eye color, I think.
Like, I really think that other people that are 5'10 shouldn't, like, talk to me because of this. Like, bro, I was just like...
I said I was a height supremacist.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. I just don't think that people that are 5'11 really should be talking to me. Like, you can stay... You can obviously... I can have people that are 5'11 teaching their children that are also 5'11. But really, like, bro... It's just like, and so here's something like a kind of a nice finishing note, I suppose, which is a compliment from me to pay you. I think that the particular logic that you use to repurpose the ridiculous ideas that we see in the world at the moment to work against themselves is a art form that very few people have got. So the obviously the classic example is the deadlift video, where the rules have been so twisted, but you find a way to make them become their own paradox. You know what I mean? Like the height thing. The Ben Shapiro, why aren't you 60? Which I'm sure you'll have seen from that video. Like, why aren't you 60? Why aren't you 60? Yeah. It's exactly the same as that. And I think that that's a real art form. And another thing which I wanted to say on air, you have noticed today I've been trying to mind my P's and Q's. Between yourself and Alex O'Connor, the Cosmic Skeptic podcast, you guys have really influenced me to reduce my swearing whilst I record.
Okay. Interesting.
Anyone that's a fan of Rogan, like, he just F-bombs and C-bombs all over the place because he's a bro, right? You know, like, when you live in, now he lives in Texas, I can only imagine that's going to increase.
Probably decrease.
In Austin, you think?
Austin, I don't know Austin, but yeah. I don't know, LA, compared to LA, Texas is certainly more conservative, let's say.
But yeah, I just like, my mum always shouts at me on my show. Like, everyone's mums will shout at them on this way, you know? Like, no one's mum is allowed to, your mum could be in her final few days enjoying her time with her family and you'd like swear in the other room and she'll still shout at you. Like, mum, like, come on. But
I don't know what that's like, Chris. I don't know what that's like. I've got a clean mouth.
That's true. That is true. But yes, I am endeavoring to do the same. I think that
that's a worthy
habit to deprogram. Yeah. And that's been, you've been a big influence on that.
I'm happy to hear that. That's actually really cool, man. I'm happy to hear that. Chris, dude, it's been so good to talk to you, bro. This will not be, certainly will not be our last podcast. But before we go, where can people check you out online and where can people find your podcast?
So Modern Wisdom, wherever you're listening, just search Modern Wisdom. It'll come up, YouTube, iTunes, all that. Or Chris Williamson, just at Chris Will X, Twitter, Instagram, wherever it is. Zuby, man, I really appreciate this conversation. You're a great guy. It's such a shame we were going to spend a bit of time together and then see each other, even though we're at other ends of the country, and then a pandemic hit and kind of got in the way. But once it's done, hopefully we'll get to do, you know, maybe an in-person, maybe a training session or something like that.
Yeah, most definitely, awesome. Bro. Most definitely, man. We'll make it happen.
Thank you.
Nice one, bro. Take care.
Sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise, and with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.